honest, so I don't have any difficulty recognizing his face.
Maybe you, at this point, we ought to tell people that you are an attorney here in the city of Santa Cruz.
Yes, I am. I'm an attorney, and I do various causes that bring me into occasional conflict with Eleanor, and so I do have an axe to grind, and people should be aware of that in evaluating my work.
Occasionally. I think your career has been pretty much, you and Al have been going head-to-head since, what was the creek out north of Scott's Creek days?
Scott's Creek was the first time, and lately I've been involved in the defense of 40 or 50 of the Lockheed defendants.
Right. And are you involved in the homeless? Any of the homeless?
And I've been involved in most of the homeless trials as
well. Okay. So people know who you are. I just thought it would be
Sure, sure. And I wouldn't want to mislead anybody because I don't want to follow all the patterns of the Sheriff's Department in that regard.
Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, you also know from the Sentinel article that there was a sort of a concession that it may be that one of the officers at one point got in the way of the camera. Not asserting specifically, but giving the implication that, well, perhaps one of these officers, while being busy with their duty, might have got in the way of a good camera view or something as innocuous and innocent as that. Let me tell you in that regard what I personally saw on the film. Twice. At least, well, I think it was just two times exactly. You see Al Nolan approaching the camera while there's brutality going on and being filmed by the camera. You can see his face clearly and the arm and hand extending from his torso connected to his face, and it is his hand that comes up to the camera and covers the lens. That happens twice during the film footage.
Now, why do you think that he would do that? Why would the sheriff, knowing that it's a video, knowing that it's going to be viewed, do something like that? That doesn't make much sense, does it?
I personally believe that he thought he could get away with that and that what was being filmed was going to be more devastating and more harmful to the claims of the Sheriff's Department than any protester or protest group that was somehow claiming that Al Nolan was giving them a hassle.
Well, now, have these people approached you to defend them, the pro-choice people?
No, I have not been approached by them in my capacity as a lawyer.
It would be an interesting juxtaposition, wouldn't it, to have you working with what basically is the right wing, a political right wing?
Well, let me say that I said in my capacity as a lawyer.
Yeah.
I do intend to work with right wing, middle wing, or crooked wing, whatever the case is, in defense of civil liberties.
Good for you.
I don't have any embarrassment about that. I work with people on a delineated basis on specific issues where I can, in good conscience, work with them. That does not mean that I'm joining them in their interference with women exercising their constitutional rights to have an abortion. But it does mean that once they are arrested and once they are going limp, they have exactly the same rights as any other demonstrator for any other cause not to be brutalized.
Absolutely.
And I don't have any embarrassment whatsoever about standing up for their right to be free of torture, regardless of what the cause was that brought them to the point of arrest.
I think it's real interesting that it's going to open a lot of eyes, maybe on the right-hand side, about what has been going on in these demonstrations and the brutality that has been going on since as long as we can remember. And maybe it's going to bring both sides together, at least on this particular issue.
Well, that is actually happening in Santa Cruz, and I don't mean both sides together on the abortion issue. That is one, an issue that there's going to be, quite frankly, a tremendous amount of painful and really enlightened dialogue on in this country for a long time, I think. But the there is in Santa Cruz County a coalition forming among anti-war groups and Operation Rescue and anybody else who is interested in it on recognizing that notwithstanding the tremendous and profound differences between the causes for which they wish to demonstrate, that they have a mutual interest in trying to document and ultimately curtail the use of torture against their various demonstrators once the point of arrest has been achieved.
So what are you going to do?
Specifically, we intend to be documenting some of the wrongs that are involved in the pain compliance holds, etc.
I like the terminology they use, the pain and compliance holds, which, really, I mean, the woman had her arm broken. Is that on video, that happened?
Yes, it was on video, and interestingly enough, at the very point of the breaking of the arms, you see the officers immediately shifting from the torture hold into a more appropriate civilized hold in which they continue carrying her away in the way that they were totally free to do with the same expenditure of energy earlier.
Well, one of the excuses that they used in the article was that a lot of people, when they go limp, especially if they're heavy, can hurt the officers. So the officers are justified in applying some kind of a painful hold to make them do what they want.
Well, let me approach that from two standpoints. I've personally been involved in a profession that involved risk to back injuries, etc. And that is, I was once involved as a nursing assistant in hospitals. Nursing assistants are all the time injuring their backs, trying to go ahead and lift patients, etc., and turning them over at night. And the point I'm making is that what nursing assistants and nurses have in common with police officers is that there are bona fide risks to back injuries in the performance of their job if they are not being careful and in the way they perform that job. And in the human course of events, what's going to happen is that from time to time, they are going to be negligent and lift from the wrong direction, and they can get back injuries, and that is unfortunate, but that's an occupational risk. And it is true that by applying torture, they can minimize the number of times that they are subjected to that risk. But look at what the justification for torture is all the way around the world, and in any number of contexts. It is also true that when you have criminal suspects at large, or criminal suspects rather in captivity, and you are trying to go ahead and extract information from them that might be used to lessen the exposure of fellow officers to risk, whether it be a military side or whether it be a police, do we allow torture to be utilized to extract a confession? It is a quicker way to results.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a fundamental human rights question of, is torture an acceptable way to achieve results, to shortcut more civilized ways of doing business? And it's clear that you can, without the use of torture, but with the use of, undoubted human sweat that is very arduous, carry a limp prisoner from point A to point B, and if you do it carefully, you do not injure yourself.
Right.
And so I think that we need to take responsibility as a society that bypassing torture will produce, given negligence, et cetera, it's going to happen, more back injuries to cops. But I think that's part of the social cost we have to have. It, the opposite conclusion is just horrendous. And so I'm not interested in discounting the likelihood of, if this happens 1,000 times, that maybe one cop will strain their back doing it. I'm saying that is better than allowing torture.
Well, there's a lot of other ways of moving people around. I mean, there's also stretchers. They could just roll them into a stretcher if they don't want to move. You know, if they go limp, just put them on a stretcher.
Yeah,
and lift
there are innumerable ways, and they can cause hassle and inconvenience, but torture should not be permitted to be among them.
Well, I think that I certainly agree with you, and I hope the rest of our listeners...
I just want to make my second point.
Please do.
And that is this, is that Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office is not the only department in our Santa Cruz County that has employed this particular device of torture. Although it is the best documented example is the Operation Rescue example on Mission Street on that particular occasion. But the Santa Cruz City Police, totally different jurisdiction, under the leadership of Sergeant David St. Ange, employed similar techniques against certain demonstrators on behalf of the homeless cause last March during a late evening sleep-in at the town clerk.
Now, has this been documented on film?
No, it is not documented on film. It is, its only documentation is by witnesses, including myself.
I see.
But I personally did witness that, unlike the Operation Rescue thing, which I only witnessed to watching their film strips. But I personally witnessed it, and it was horrendous to behold, and quite frankly, I woke up the next morning with the images that I saw of that torture repeating itself in my mind, and I just involuntarily started sobbing. It was just horrendous to behold. It was anything but professionalism. It was torture.
Well, didn't they go through this a few years ago when they were harassing campers and homeless people down the river and under the bridges? Wasn't
it about the late 70s and early 80s?
Yeah.
There were also forms of torture then, but they were not under the guise of professionalism. That was under a more... it was a different style of fascism that was occurring then. I'm familiar with some of those incidents. It involved, for example, the picking up of one fellow by his head and threatening to hang him, which no police officer is yet claiming that that is professional. It was the sort of thing that was done secretly and with cover-up from higher ranks of the previous police department. that kind of activity, where it is not, where it doesn't have the blessings of professional apologetica, has been mostly banned. Mostly purged from the Santa Cruz City Police. And I don't want to pretend that our department has gone back to those days. The administration of Jack Bassett is far, far different from the administration of Gino Pini was, the earlier police chief. And I'm critical of Bassett in many regards, but he does not have a department that is running amok with sadistic and spontaneous sadistic torture of a number of people with official cover-up from above.
Why do you think, and it sounds like you've been involved in this for a while, that the police resort to this, knowing that it's against the public who they're working for? If they're not working with hardened criminals, they're working with people who with consciousnesses that dictate that they do this. They're not trying to, you know, really... I mean, they're not evil people, I don't think. They're not hardcore criminals. Why do the police... react so harshly? Why do they use these kind of painful things?
Two reasons, I think. First of all, I think we have to clarify that most police are not doing so. The police that are doing the pain compliance holds, I'd say the majority of them are still trying to do it in a fairly restrained way so that they are not inflicting the most sadistic forms of torture. This is really a minority of cops who are doing it, but the official policies of letting them do it are letting those folks who have the more letting those police who have the more sadistic impulses get away with it. So we're not dealing with, you know, I'm not trying to brandish or brand 100% of cops or 100% of sheriff's deputies as being sadistic.
No, and I certainly wouldn't want to be doing that either. That's
right.
Not what
including those who engage in what's ostensibly pain compliance holds, but, you know, they're done to varying degrees. Second is that I think it does matter in terms of how much license they feel they have as to the nature of the demonstration. As an example of that, I think if we had a demonstration to give an example of one that has a cause that is in my favor and that I have represented on many occasions, say a feminist, socialist feminist mentality, I think that most of the departments locally would recognize that that has enough support in this community that you would not dare torture those people. On the other hand, I think when we're dealing with the homeless people in Santa Cruz County that have so antagonized the progressives on the city council, as well as the conservatives on the city council, I think they are seen as fair targets for whatever the cops want to dish out. And I'm not suggesting, and I want to be real clear on this, I'm not suggesting that the city council progressives are trying to arrange for torture. What I am suggesting is that the hostility and indifference of the majority of the city council toward the homeless and toward the street people have signaled the police that that is not going to be an area where they will be held accountable. That what happens to those people will be more, for the most part, shined on. And I think that maybe the sheriff's department had similar feelings that in a community such as Santa Cruz that has such a strong feminist consciousness strong support for women exercising their constitutional right for abortion, and should have it. I'm not trying to deny that at all, but that I think that they felt that there would be such hostility to the Operation Rescue people that, again, they would be acceptable targets.
Okay, I see
and
what you're saying.
I think that part also fell into it. But ultimately, you see, anybody is at risk, because as long as these are acceptable tactics, then whatever becomes disfavored at the moment or is disfavored by a particular cop, whether it be an anti-war demonstrator or whatever, is vulnerable to this form of torture.
All right, well, I think you've made some good points here, and I'd like to give the rest of our listeners a chance to call in. Ray, how do you pronounce your last name again?
Grenach. Right.
Okay, attorney, and has represented a lot of people. We thank you for your interest in calling. Glad you're listening.
Bye-bye.
And if you'd like to join us, 429-4036 is the number here at KZSC's Talk About. Art O'Sullivan has joined me. How you doing, Art?
Oh, just great, John.
And we will continue our discussion. If you'd like to talk more about what we've just been talking about, give us a call, as this person has. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm glad you had Ray on. I think he's very eloquent, and he's talking about an issue that's a very important one. I just wanted to say that I was present at this homeless demonstration he mentioned in, I guess it was late February, early March. It was about 20 or 30 students who slept in at the town clock in order to protest the 11 to 8:30 camping ban, or sleeping ban. And indeed, if the demonstrators refused to get up voluntarily, their hands were twisted behind their backs and they were wrenched and you would hear screams of pain coming from people. There was one man who was so determined not to get up that he continued to scream in agony as they essentially dragged him and carried him, and all the time twisting his hand to a van. So it's I just wanted to second that there was another person who observed this behavior by the Santa Cruz City Police, or actually, as Mr. Grunek points out, certain individuals on the force.
But again, there was no video done of this. You have a battery of witnesses in this particular case. Is there something going on right now about it?
Well, there is a video of it that we've been trying to secure. It was taken under bad conditions because it was late at night and there were no effective lighting that would enable clear identification of people. Although, you know, we were watching, we saw what was happening. But as far as I know, there is no specific legal suits coming out of that because, again, the practice is considered to be legal. Although, I have here in my hand an article from the San Jose Mercury News of June 23rd, which I don't know if Ray brought this up. It's the judge, a federal judge up in San Francisco, banned the use of pain holds by cops on political protesters, specifically with reference to folks at the Concord Naval Weapons Station who were blocking trains 2 months after Brian Wilson's legs got taken off by the train. And the judge, Stanley Weigel, ordered Contra Costa County to pay $50,000 to three anti-war demonstrators who had, and indeed this may sound familiar, arms broken or wrenched in November 1987 by deputies pulling them from the tracks used to haul armaments to and from the depot. So this, I don't know quite how far this decision extends. I guess I would presume it doesn't extend into this jurisdiction because hopefully if it did, the sheriff's department would be aware of that and would presumably stop using them, and the city police as well. But
presumably,
you know, at
hopefully,
least up there, it may have quelled this action somewhat. Apparently, they said that the hold violates demonstrators' freedom of speech because it tends to chill political speech. I mean, if you think you're going to be tortured for engaging in a demonstration of symbolic speech, you're perhaps less likely to do it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Well, thank you for calling us and backing up Ray on that one. We do appreciate it. And if you'd like to join us, 429-4036. It would be interesting to hear if there's anybody who was there protesting with the right to life that was on on the lines there that day. I'd sure like to hear from you. Or if you happen to be a sheriff's deputy who was there working, would like to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you, particularly. I'm sure there's a lot of them listening tonight. 429-4036 is a number up here at KZSC. And that particular discussion was centering on police using painful holds to get people to do what they want them to do, to move them in demonstrations. And good to have that stuff. Speaking of lawyers, we'll take the lighter side here for a second. There was another article in the paper. The lawyers are meeting to improve their image down in Laguna Niguel, down in Southern California.
As if their image needed any improving.
Yeah, I mean, everybody loves the lawyers. Mm-hmm. One of the things they said, well, we think that nobody trusts us anymore.
Anymore.
Yeah, I don't know where they got that idea. There's the old lawyer joke about there was the difference between a dead skunk in the road and a dead lawyer in the road.
Mm.
There's skid marks in front of the skunk.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for that joke, Art.
No, it's not mine. Folks, John's joke. You suppose there's a problem in the fact that lawyers are basically legalese the whole thing in Latin. And it's a whole realm that most people don't understand. That it's one of those areas like doctors where you kind of have to trust them and you kind of wish you didn't have to. And since lawyers by nature are trying to think of any way to wangle something, never mind so much the what some of us might call justice, but sort of a way to get around something and loopholes and things like that. That is sort of an inherently, dare I say, sneaky profession, with the exclusion of anybody who's listening now, of course.
Of course.
But
well, that's their job, is to find a way, if you're in trouble, to get you out of it.
Right, so, or if you're out of it, get you into it, depending
yeah,
on.
There's that, too. Well, anyway, I thought it was interesting that they have taken note of that and are actually meeting to find ways to improve how people perceive their profession, because it could use some upgrading. There are definitely, again, very good lawyers who are honorable people, but it seems that most of the government people are lawyers in there. There seems to be a lot of corruption in the higher levels of government. HUD, of course, being one of those things where a lot of problems going on. And I guess it's affected something here in Santa Cruz. They just lost money through a HUD agency. They were going to redevelop something, and because of all of the scandals going on right now that they decided not to do it and pulled the money. And Mitch Schneider was here in Santa Cruz also. I don't know if that was a plan, but it was about the homeless. And one of the things that happened up in Oakland, Dorothy King, who has been an activist, was arrested for occupying an empty federally owned house that it's run and administered by HUD. They have passed a law called the Homeless Assistance Act, and this is to help get people into homes. And it is they take these homes and they are administered by nonprofit organizations to find the people who need homes and so that they can live in it. Well, they had all these houses up there that nobody was using or weren't giving to anything, so she went and moved into one, and they arrested her. She'd also had the same thing happen to her in Denver, where the same kind of a situation was happening, and turned things around, and those houses now are being used for the homeless. And there's a lot of empty buildings around that should be used and aren't, and Dorothy King has become involved that way in using these empty houses. Of course, that's not going to work in Santa Cruz because there's no such thing as empty houses in Santa Cruz, at least to my knowledge.
Right.
429-4036 is the number here at KZSC. If you'd like to join us with any comments on what we're talking about or anything that seems to be bothering you.
I have a comment on your last point.
Yeah.
I wonder to what extent do powers that be not want to put together housing for the homeless, to the extent that they'd rather that a lot of those people not be around, and giving them a home doesn't make them otherwise, quote, desirable, unquote, if they're not perceived as contributing in this sort of mainstream sort of way to the community.
Well, I just don't know the answer.
Just posing
to that.
An additional question.
An additional one. You're on the air. The answer to that, or do you have something else you want to talk about?
Well, yes, I just tuned in a few minutes ago. I don't know what you're talking about right now because I'm in the other room.
Oh, that's
but
all right.
What I caught you saying was that you thought that there were no empty houses in Santa Cruz County.
Well, not a lot, I wouldn't think. Is
no,
it?
I've been told that there's hundreds and thousands of them.
Jeez.
Now, I don't know exactly where I got that from. It's been a while since I heard that, but it was from a trustworthy source, and I would check into that more. Because
well,
I don't know what this program is about. I just turned on the radio, but I assume it has something to do with the homeless and housing homeless people.
Well, this particular section, it's a call-in talk show, and we're talking about anything that's in the news or anything that people want to talk about, and that just happened to be one of the things that came up.
Yeah, I think that that's something that should be investigated further. Because I was told that there are especially houses in the area of and buildings. I don't know if they're homes, if they're houses, but over by off of let's see, it's over by where Lipton Soup is and all that area.
Well, there's probably some empty buildings over there, yeah, that were manufacturing buildings at one time that probably in the computer industry that aren't being used right now. Whether they're satisfactory for housing people, I don't know.
Right, so my suggestion is that you check into it. And I've also heard that there are quite a few abandoned houses in the county. Now, where that would be, perhaps it's up in the mountains more and, you know, maybe in some areas that are not as accessible as downtown Santa Cruz. But that may be ideal because of all the debate over being able to have a shelter downtown where, you know, people would have to be, quote, exposed to all these homeless people. And I think my suggestion is that you check into it.
Well, we'll see if anybody else knows anything about it. I mean, if they're isolated houses up in the mountains, I don't know that we'll find out much about that. But it would say the reason I said that and my logic behind this being that a house is so valuable in Santa Cruz that the owners of the house are not going to let it sit empty because it's worth so much money to them.
Right.
And so that's why I would feel that there aren't a lot. Now, up in Oakland, that's a bit of a different situation. There aren't all that many, you know, it's not that desirable a place to live where the houses are available. You know,
right, but you'd be surprised how people power can change an undesirable house into a livable one.
Oh, yeah.
I've done it myself with friends.
Oh, yes. And
even in this area. I mean, we were
in and find out. Thanks for being with us tonight. This is KZ.
This is KPFA, July 13th, 1989. Homeless stuff.
Abandoned buildings for them to stay in. Wendell Harbor reports.
San Francisco Mayor Art Agnos listened to the concerns of the homeless during a groundbreaking ceremony in San Francisco as reporters recalled for Agnos what was being said. KPFA talked to one of the homeless representatives earlier in the day.
If this building is not available because some kind of paperwork in a court or something like that, I'm sure there are some other buildings that are being abandoned. And let the private sector pull itself together, the churches, the community leaders, pull themselves together, excuse me, and get this homeless situation straightened out.
What was being referred to, a building on Golden Gate Avenue owned by Hastings College of the Law. Agnos later broke ground on an affordable family housing development that soon will house 36 low-income families, he says. The mayor told reporters that he would be more than willing to approve abandoned buildings for the homeless to live in so long as the buildings meet code requirements. The mayor also chided reporters at the former Southern Pacific Hospital site near the Haight-Ashbury Panhandle, and although he never called him by name, blasted Supervisor Bill Maher for his suggestion about what to do with the homeless in Civic Center Plaza.
But this one...
Members of the House and Senate renewed the debate over flag burning today as the House Subcommittee on Constitutional Law kicked around President Bush's proposal for a constitutional amendment to overturn the Supreme Court's recent rule protecting flag burning as a form of free speech. Amid the torrid rhetoric today, a fashion show by Representative Pat Schroeder of Colorado. Pacifica's Rebecca Davis was there.
The amendment under consideration in the Subcommittee on Civil and Constitutional Rights gives Congress and the states the power to prohibit the physical desecration of the flag. Called for by President Bush last month, the amendment is a way for Congress to circumvent the recent Supreme Court ruling, which wrote that the Constitution protects flag desecration as a show of political protest. But those who support the amendment argue that the flag is a national symbol which unites the country and under which people have fought and died. Testifying today before the subcommittee, Democratic Senator Joseph Biden from Delaware said it is not our ethnicity that holds us together, it is our common commitment to a form of government with shared values and shared ideals.
So when my colleagues who don't like my amendment or my lack of opposition to a constitutional amendment say to me, well, look, in France they don't protect their flag, in England they don't protect their flag, and so on, I say to them, it does not have a compelling government interest in those countries. It does here. We need unity and symbol, a manifestation.
Summer.
Okay, July 28th, shortly to be the 5 o'clock KUSP news broadcast.
All things considered, good evening. I'm Vicki Voss, and this is a look at some of the local and regional news. After more than 20 hours of deliberation, the jury has finally reached a verdict in the trial of five homeless activists in Santa Cruz. The five were charged with trespassing and failure to disperse. Late last night, Sandra Loringer was found guilty of failure to disperse. Activist Robert Norris was declared a hung jury. The rest were found not guilty. Sandra Loringer will be sentenced on Monday. She could face another 6 months in jail. Loringer is currently serving time in jail on a similar charge. Robert Norris says this may have influenced the jury in finding her guilty.
Well, I was only able to speak to two of the jurors last night, and what one of them told me was that she admitted to having heard first the head of the shelter and then the policeman say that that she was supposed to leave or she would be under arrest. But all of us admitted on the stand that we heard that, and they didn't find us guilty. So it's bizarre. The only thing that I can think of is that she was in prison clothing. She was sitting segregated from the rest of us. She was unable to talk to her attorney to the extent that we were. These are the major differences in our actual physical demeanor. And also she had to sit downstairs alone in a kind of the underground dungeon area without any kind of company, without any kind of nourishment or drink or reading material for 6 to 8 hours at a stretch while waiting for the court to reconvene. She'd come in at 8:30 in the morning, the court would start at 1:30. I mean, it was grim for her.
Norris himself will be retried on the same charges. The five were arrested on New Year's Eve while staging a sit-in at the River Street shelter. This trial was one in a series of trials of homeless activists, but Norris says he's pleased with this particular trial. The judge, he says, allowed more evidence than usual, and he says the jurors asked many questions, not a normal procedure during a court hearing. Still, Norris says he sees the series of trials as a waste of time.
The county has spent over $20,000 in what may be was nearly the longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history. And they were unable to get more than one conviction out of 10 charges, something they should have known at the very beginning. This whole matter, the annex occupation, was settled in January. 10 days after there was this half-hour sit-in, the annex was opened up to the public, and the matter was resolved. So the fact that they're pursuing it indicates to me that they're just, it's kind of sour grapes, a bitterness or a desire to somehow harass homeless activists. It has not much to do with real crimes.
Nora says he hopes this verdict will discourage the county from pursuing some of the further trials. Meanwhile, a group of activists is now collecting signatures to ask the district attorney to pardon Loringer or at least grant her a concurrent sentence. Norris's trial will begin next week. The potential November ballot in Santa Cruz is growing longer today.
Outside of a house or hotel. So people in cars, people having to fall asleep over a cup of coffee in a restaurant, people asleep under a bridge, all these people become criminals after 11 o'clock at night. We feel this is not particularly unfair because of the fact that there are hundreds of people here who don't have any shelter, aren't likely to get any, and so are essentially at the mercy of the police each night.
Do you feel this law was specifically designed to rout the homeless out of Santa Cruz?
Not initially. Although it was, to some extent, a lifestyle law that was passed in the late 70s. It is, however, being used to that effect now.
Okay, what do you hope to accomplish with the rally tomorrow?
Well, we hope to let homeless people here become aware that other homeless people from different parts of the state are facing similar problems. Let them know that they're not alone in their determination to assert their basic rights. And also to give people who are sympathetic locally a chance to come out and support homeless people and say, look, this is a crazy law. It costs so much more to actually enforce it than to, say, set up a low-income campground somewhere, that it should be changed.
What is the general attitude of city officials in Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz has what's called a progressive majority on its city council, which has the ability to change this law by a majority vote. However, unfortunately, most of these officials are opposed to any change in the existing law. They claim that the problem is a national one, it is not their responsibility or their fault. And fundamentally, they have continued to let their police department rage unabated. Police here have been engaging in a systematic campaign of harassment against homeless activists for the last 7 months, using misdemeanor citations for public nuisance to pursue people who are essentially petitioning. Not people who are drunk, not people who are panhandling or abusive, but people who are trying to alert the citizenry to the need to change these laws.
Now, the homeless haven't been creating any sort of problems to draw the attention of the laws, have they?
Well, there's always, of course, problems among the homeless. I mean, you have a population of people who have a variety of difficulties, which are compounded by the fact that they have no place to stay. I mean, if most of us had the problems we have, and on top of that had no place to stay, we might indeed come to the attention of the police in many cases. But, you know, you have a situation where the average person who is homeless, in my opinion, should not have her his problems compounded by becoming criminal at night when you try to go to sleep.
Also tomorrow there is the Homeless Congress. Exactly what is that?
Well, the Homeless Congress is an attempt to essentially compare notes and set down some policy guidelines for how we feel municipalities can effectively deal with legitimate health and safety problems and at the same time respect the rights of the poorest of its citizens.
Now, this is not geared just specifically towards Santa Cruz, is it? Is this, statewide?
Right. It is statewide, although Santa Cruz was chosen as the place to do this because Santa Cruz has one of the most glaring laws that actually prohibits not camping per se, but actually sleeping.
What sort of things are you going to be discussing in the Congress tomorrow? Affordable housing and such?
Affordable housing will be discussed. We're also going to be focusing on issues of problems that homeless run into in particular localities and the situation, for example, in San Jose, San Francisco, and Santa Barbara, where there are, as you know, in Santa Barbara, there have been, for 3 months, the homeless have been demonstrating and sleeping in on City Hall to get the City Hall area, to attempt to get the city to continue its policy of not criminalizing sleeping, which it instituted in 1986. In San Francisco, there's a crisis coming on because at the Civic Center there, police intend to sweep the homeless from the park, having set up a cosmetic series of services which can not in any way deal with the real problems, but will satisfy people that there's a solution when there is none. And in San Jose, there's been a 9-day attempt to run out homeless from the downtown area using a similar cosmetic.